Make It Right, the manufacturing podcast.
I'm Janet Eastman, and welcome to the Make It Right podcast. Today, we continue our conversation with global supply chain strategist Filippo Mauri. When he was last on the show, we talked about his very humid approach to his job, how he gets curious about a country and its culture so he can successfully and honestly engage with the members of the supply chain, even when those teams include thousands of people. This week, our conversation focuses on emerging markets and managing in different geopolitical environments. He also talks about the growing power of these markets. Here's our conversation. So you're now working with companies to help them move into new markets or to redesign their supply chains. So I would imagine that you're facing some of those same challenges. You know, tell me some of the interesting and challenging things you've run into culturally and geopolitically.
Oh, well, yeah, that's, you know, more recently I was responsible for Africa and Eurasia, okay? So this is more than half the countries that you have in the world. And, so you have, for instance, in such a division, you had the richest country in the world and the poorest country in the world. Mm-hmm. And you had, you know, you move from Russia, okay, all the way down to South Africa. We have everything that is in between. So it's such an amazing thing to understand let's say the difference in terms of culture, to understand directly how the people grew up. Okay, and what were the things that were told to people when they were growing up, right? Because we tend to think we're a little bit quote-unquote Western-centric, okay? But This is just simply one view among many. So, for instance, it is very, very interesting to go and discuss, for instance, with Turkish people or with Russia, what Russians and understand what are the different views of the world and the alternative views of the world that are proposed. And the same thing I would say that was very, very interesting. I've been managing all the the situation during the recent tension in the Middle East, and I believe that it was such a rewarding experience to get to know from different people at the same time a sense of what was going on, for instance, in of course, for instance, in the Islamic world, and understand better in a less, let's say, judgmental way to understand what was going on. And I can tell you that is not at all what is represented sometimes of the media. So basically, the managing the such a diverse environment enables you to see opportunities faster than one than you can actually see on the here on the media or from the analysts, because you are on the ground. For instance, the you have seen recently the announcement of the Chinese president is making, you know, huge investment in Africa, right? And of course, they have been doing a huge investment in Africa because actually China believes in the development in Africa. And I can tell you that Africa is a place where very soon you're going to have about more than 1 billion new, for instance, consumers. So it's a place that should be absolutely a focus. And sometimes big organizations stay a little bit away because they're a little bit fearful of the difficulties in terms of instability, in terms of infrastructure. But it's only, you know, it's like if you assess the story of the world looking up only at the past 10 years, right? What you need to look at is actually what is the potential of the continent. And I'm sure in 10, 20 years from now, we will be speaking about the different stories. And You can see, for instance, all the opportunities linked to the One Belt, One Road initiative, or for instance, all the activities around the free trade zone in Africa. The development in ports and free trade zones, what you see is that the infrastructure is actually growing around, and we're getting ready for a potential expansion in the economy as soon as the commodity prices start going up again.
So when you look at this growth that you see coming, and you look at some of the companies that you've worked with in the past, how are people in manufacturing looking at automation? Is it something that they think is the future and is going to help build economies? Or are the people that are working in these factories fearful of this automation because they may take their jobs?
Okay. This is a very interesting topic because, definitely, you know, automation is something that actually is going to transform the way we operate, for instance, in emerging markets. Okay, there is a there is an expression that I don't like at all, is that we call very frequently some countries in the emerging world, we call them cheap labor countries, okay, which is a terrible expression. Yes, it is true. People in those countries actually make less money than a similar worker in, for instance, in Europe or in US, but certainly this does not mean that the way things are manufactured is the same as 20 or 30 years ago. Okay, so you can actually dare introducing automation, and the way you actually respond to the fear of losing the job of the show floor is say, listen, probably we're going to have some reduction. But what I'm trying to do with automation is not installing automation with the only purpose of removing people. I'm installing automation also to address some ergonomics imperatives, to make a better workplace, to ensure that long term you don't develop some musculoskeletal disease. This is the approach that actually brings a lot of people around this concept, because I'm not acting with the sole purpose of reducing labor. Okay, I'm not acting only dimensionally with the idea of optimize my return on investment. What I'm doing is that I'm thinking a little bit forward, and I'm saying, well, do I want to stay to still have the 90-50 or 90-60 lines in emerging countries, or do I want to dare to leverage on a favorable cost of labor, also to dare on automation, and becoming and having the courage to put similar standards and to apply similar standards in Africa, in Europe, and also in everywhere else. It's no reason why you should have two different approaches led by the cost of labor. And I think that the good response to the question that if there's going to be job reduction is actually to say, yeah, probably there is going to be a job number of jobs reduction, but what we know is that people is going to work better and actually in a much more socially responsible way.
So the automation is going to take away the hard labor, the less manual labor, and make actually working more ethical, and probably, well, would definitely provide better jobs to that labor force.
Yeah, I believe yes. And this is definitely is going to improve the competitiveness, for instance, of emerging markets. Okay, you're going to develop competencies in terms of skills and management, because of course you are investing into state-of-the-art equipment or advanced equipment, at least in places, and actually this promotes the evolution of the technical skills of the local engineers. Okay, so in fact, the way to also to create new jobs or to create new opportunities on the work market resides also in having the courage of investing in new technologies and make people work in an environment that actually allows to perform, right? In the, to your point, to the last point, I think that there is also a big, I would say, epochal change is the fact that we are, you know, automation, what we call, let's say, automation, it's a factory 3.0, and somehow the smart and connected supply chain, so the connection of the supply chain and the supply chain elements to the rest of the environment are actually a way not only to grant access to more people to the shop floors, okay, but also it's going to be a big enabler of gender diversity. How many countries you hear the story about saying, oh, this is a man's job because it's very heavy and so on. The fact of introducing systems actually to reduce the intensity of the labor intensity of the work, actually it's a major enabler for gender diversity. And this is a huge opportunity if you only think about what gender diversity could bring in terms of performance, workplace environment, in terms of, for instance, also of economical and financial emancipation of the women, in terms of, let's say, progress of our society. So it's really a breakthrough. So investing in automation, yes, probably is going to reduce some works, but on the other side, it's going to open a number of opportunities that probably at the end are going to be very, very rewardful.
I've been actually talking to a number of manufacturing experts over the last couple of weeks on this podcast, and they've been talking about how there's a need to actually bring young people into the industry, and they don't actually recognize that there is the opportunity out there for young people in this industry and how diverse it is. So just give me very briefly, because we're almost out of time, just you talked about gender diversity, but what are the opportunities for young people getting in this industry?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that, okay, probably the issue may be the opposite. Okay, so it's not a matter of age. Okay, I believe that, for instance, approaching to technology is a matter of how somebody is quickly adapting to a new technology and new environment. Okay, so let's say, yes, you can go around and hire millennials. Okay, now millennials are almost 35, 40, so maybe you should go to the next one. It's not hiring somebody young that is going to solve your issues. Because anyway, you cannot, what are you going to do with the remaining 1,000 people who are above 40 and they're probably not digital natives. So your problem as an organization is how you develop skills and you actually cross fertilize the organization, having the right mix of experience and young talents in order to balance the organization as a society is, but to balance the organization and be able to exchange fresh experiences and you know, quite a fresh approach to technology together with a more traditional but more skilled workforce. So you need the two. And going towards young generation or young generation at any price is something actually that weakens the company instead of getting it stronger. What you have to do is actually to try to bring, of course, new ideas, okay, bring new people inside, make room, but also to try to maintain the skills and the know-how of the company inside the company in order not to dilute it, but to make sure that the technologies and the people having the skills are actually instrumental to grow further the existing competencies. Mm-hmm. So I believe that I don't believe in giving a job to the young as a criteria. I believe in merit. Okay, I believe in the skills, and I believe in the preparation of the people. So if somebody is willing to succeed, if somebody has the right competencies, I actually it doesn't matter how old he is when he was born. We need to be able to focus on developing the people who really wants to bring his contribution to the company.
Okay. Filippo, thank you so much for your insights.
Well, it's a pleasure.
I think it's fascinating. You talked about Africa and where Africa is going. I'm going to definitely keep an eye on that. I really appreciate your insights today. Thanks very much for joining us on the Make It Right podcast.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Have a great day.
You too. Filippo Mauri is the Senior Advisor on Supply Chain Strategy. Thanks very much for listening to the Make It Right podcast. We'll see you again next time.